All right, welcome into Flight Plan. Tim McMaster here along with Paul Kilgallen, Zach Rosenblatt, and we are joined today by Nick Baumgartner for a little extra draft coverage. Welcome to the baggage handlers joining us on YouTube and all of that stuff. We are 1 week out from the draft, and we've been teasing having a guest on to talk about the draft since, like, I don't know, January. We finally got one.
We did have Dane on at one point. We had Dane on at one point during the season. Yeah.
That's right. We did early.
Yeah.
Nick, we're going to get you in a minute. First, I just wanted to check in with Zach and Paul with 1 week to go. How are we feeling, guys? Paul, first of all, fan perspective on the Jets with all the smoke flying around. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think people are uneasy, right? You don't
that's
necessarily.
That's a great word.
Yeah, you don't necessarily love it when, you know, kind of a week or 10 days before the big day, all of a sudden we have eerily similar reports coming from all the insiders at the exact same time. It feels weird, right? And so I think there's a portion of the fan base that feels good about how the Jets are attempting to manipulate the outside information. And there's another portion of the fan base that's just terrified about, like, what the hell's going on here right now. So I think everybody's really ready for it to be here.
Yeah, what I would say is I think fans are excited in theory about the fact that they have four picks in the first two rounds. But I also think as I've realized how they've reacted to mock drafts and what people are reporting is I think it's just more opportunities for them to be angry is what I've discovered, because I don't know that they're happy with anything. I saw Connor Hughes had his mock draft come out. Everybody destroyed him. You have the reports about David Bailey and Arvell Reese, and they're definitely going to get Omar Cooper and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm just so ready for this stretch of the year to be done. And I've been working on my own final mock draft like all day, and I'm stressing way too much about it. I don't know why I'm trying to think so much about this and thinking about what people are going to be mad about and stuff like that. But I'm ready for
the
draft.
Are you changing it a lot from what you've done previously?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say a lot, but, you know, just I've changed it a lot from when I started doing this mock draft like yesterday. So I've like changed my mind on like five different picks. So there you go.
I don't know if any of you guys play golf, but like the Jets have a long history of kind of shanking draft picks here. So it feels like we've been standing over the ball forever waiting to swing. And like if you play golf, you know, the longer you stand over the ball, the less we're likely that you're going to hit a good shot. And so we're just standing over it like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God.
That's great.
Let's just hope that Darren Mougie doesn't feel that way.
Right. Yeah.
And think everything will be good. All right. New feature here. We're going to fire up and see if it actually works. A poll. We're going to start things easy with the polls. We'll try to get more into this as things go forward on the pod. But who will the Jets take at number two? Arvell Reese, David Bailey, Jeremiah Love, other. Obviously, the top two are the main focus. I threw Love in there because we kind of debated the possibility of that last week. So type 1, 2, 3, or 4 in the chat, and hopefully that will make the poll go, and we'll see how things play out. We'll hide it from now. We'll bring it back a little bit later in the episode because we are going to get into things with Nick. Nick, before we get into this year, we're going to start with last year because you recently did a redraft of last year, and you had Armin Membo going second overall. Obviously, we talked about the Jets shanking picks. It seems like that was a safe pick that the Jets may have gotten right, at least at the 1 year mark. As you went back and did the exercise, like what made you land at that position?
Yeah, I think that for me, he was a guy last year that I really wanted to put higher on my board than I ended up doing. I mean, he was a top probably like 6 or 7 guy anyway that I had last year, but I feel like I wanted to put him higher than he was, but I just needed to see more stuff. I needed to see more tape. I needed to see more from him. And then, you know, after seeing his rookie year, especially what I thought he did in the run game, I think he's going to be a really good player for them. I think that was, like you said, a safe pick, a nice player. I think you compare and contrast him with like a Will Campbell. And I think I like Will Campbell too. I think Will Campbell's going to, you know, despite what we saw in the Super Bowl, I think he's still going to be a good player. But I think Membo might have a higher ceiling there. I think maybe he could blossom into something even better. So I do think that that was a really good pick. And I think that, look, if that's the strategy of just take the best guy, it works, you know? And I think that that might be an illustration right there. It doesn't have to always be a shank, right? It can just be like, it can be easy. And I think that one might've been a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. We've talked about this a bunch. The last each of the last two drafts, everybody thought the Jets were going to pick Brock Bowers and then Tyler Warren. It was like foregone right. conclusion both times. And they turn around and kind of go with the meat and potatoes offensive lineman. And I think Olu has shown less like potential than Membu probably, but he's been solid. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, like we were talking at the beginning about how I'm ready for the draft to be here. I think the biggest reason is like I'm so tired of this David Bailey versus Arvell Reese conversation. It's
right.
It's definitely more localized, I'd say, but nationally, a lot of the national insiders are all declaring it's going to be Bailey. I've stuck with my guns. I still think it'll be Reese, but I'm curious where you stand on that pick, just from all the angles in terms of who you would pick, who you think it will be, like who you think fits best in like an Aaron Glenn defense. Like I'm curious where you're at.
For me, I would take Reese. I think Reese is the guy. I mean, it's close. It really is, because Bailey yeah. is a true, you know, a pro pass rusher. I mean, he's got a deep bag of tricks. He's got all the stuff that you need. He's going to be a guy, I think, that is a big sack producer for, you know, a long time, as long as he stays healthy. But I think Reese is going to do all that stuff too, possibly, but maybe even more. Like, for me, he is the closest prospect that we have seen, the closest to Micah Parsons since Micah Parsons, right? So, that's, you know, we've seen all these guys. Every time guys come out, like last year with now his name is escaping me, the Giants guy from Penn State.
Abdul Carter, yeah.
It's like, you know, we're comparing him to Micah, but we're like, you know, it's you got to squint a little bit more. You got to squint less with Reese. Like physically, he is that guy, and we really haven't even seen sort of him scratch the surface quite yet. They didn't do anything with him until Matt Patricia got there and sort of introduced some NFL concepts, and then he just completely exploded. And if you watched his tape last year, I think he's got more potential to impact a defense as just one player, whereas Bailey is just, he's going to be a really good pass rusher, but it's just,
yeah.
that's what he's going to do. Maybe not against the run, maybe not in other situations.
Yeah, so as I'm sure you've picked up by now, I'm just a fan, and these guys let me hang out with them twice a week here. So,
first of all, that's not fair. You are a fan, but you're also
the fan.
Very much like up on all of it, so. Yeah. Anyway,
so I was going through your last mock, and I'm going to drop the link to it in the chat here in a minute so people can take a look at it. You had the Jets picking Arvell Reese first. You went pass catcher at 16, but not the pass catcher that we're all thinking. You went Kenyon Sadiq
right.
with Mekhi Lemon and Tyson on the board, who are two Jets fan favorites there. Ty Simpson at 33 and Gabe Jackis at 44. So I'd like to get your thinking on Sadiq. And then Ty at 33, and then Jackis at 44 too. With, and I'll just throw a few players that Jets fans really like here that were on the board at 44: Pons, Eli Stowers, Jeremy Bernard, Jadarian Price, Colton Hood. These are all players that Jets fans really like a lot. So, can you take us through the thinking between the double dip at edge at 44, Sadiq pick at 16, and Ty Simpson at 33?
Yeah, with Sadiq especially, I think that for me, I tried to look at this for the Jets. I've given them Tyson and other drafts as well, but I really did try to look at this for the Jets as like, just go with the best player. Just go with the, because I feel like when they traded off as much as they did, you know, the plan is to just completely restock the thing with as good of young talent as you can possibly get. So don't worry about, hey, what's the scheme going to look like or what's this going to look like? Just get the best guys you can get at every stop, no matter what, and then just keep going from there. So for me, Sadiq is a guy that has the ability, it's almost like a Sonny Styles conversation in a different position, where he could end up being kind of like the prototype for the position of tight end. He's a 4.39 guy at 245 pounds. He can run any route. He can play X. He can play Z. He can play inline. He can play fullback. He can do anything, really. So, like, to me, he's a pass catcher, and it's very similar to, you know, I mean, a receiver in today's NFL anyway. So that, to me, I think he's a little bit better than, I would put him higher than Jordan Tyson, but it's tough because Tyson, if we take away the injury concerns, he is a top 10 player in this class for me, no question. But the injury concerns are there. Either way, if he can stay healthy and you get him at 16, I think that's a terrific pickup. With Simpson, I thought, you know, to me, the Jets have enough sort of wiggle room here with their picks now and next year at the top of the draft. Like, they have more picks this year than anybody in terms of full capital. And next year, they're set up to have pretty similar. So I think they have a chance here to take a chance on a quarterback this year if they want and see, you know, maybe not a first round guy that you don't have to invest in long term or whatever, worry about. If he works out, he works out, whatever. Then next year you go at it again and you get the best one you can possibly get. And maybe you let those guys go at it, whatever you want to do, and you figure it out from there. I think that's sort of my thinking, is there's some guys in this class that are, and Simpson's one of them, that are worth at least kicking the tires on. And so that was a thought press there. And then to double dip at edge, for me, it was, again, it was just best player. And I had Akis ahead of another guy. Like, I think it was between him and Pons for me, actually, because Pons is, I actually wrote this today in something else. My NFL comp for D'Angelo Pons is Aaron Glenn. Like, he is like exactly
I've been
like,
saying that. Yeah.
He's exactly like Aaron Glenn. And, you know, I'm here in Michigan, obviously, so I know AG from when he was with the Lions. Like, Pons' personality is exactly like Aaron Glenn's, too. Like, the more people pick on him, the madder he gets and the worse it gets for the other side. So he would be a perfect fit for them, no question about it. It's just a matter of, you know, what they want to do, where they want to do it. I just – positions to me right now for the Jets, I'm not even sure if I worry so much about that. They need so much, and they just need talent. They need guys who are going to come in there and be serious about changing the culture. And I've also liked – you know, if they could get their hands on a guy like Caleb Downs, like a culture changer, right? Like, I think those are the things that I'd be looking for right now if I were the Jets.
And I will add that you had Tyson falling all the way to 21 with the Steelers in your draft, which just feels so right. Like, there are certain franchises like the Steelers and the Eagles that fall just sit there,
fall into their lap,
and they just have good players come to them. And like, if the NFL lets the Steelers get Jordan Tyson, it would be right.
Yeah, and I've said that about, like, Sadiq is also going to be an Eagle, I assume. Like, he's going to fall to the Phillies somehow.
That's a great call. That's a great call.
Yeah, right.
Speaking of those pass catchers, the way you have the receivers going, I think, is a little different than some people that are really high on this wide receiver class. But Paul just mentioned you have Tyson at 21, Lemon at 24, you have Cooper in the second round. How did you go about grading these guys and grouping them together as far as the receiving core?
Yeah, so for me, I think that the top tier there is Carnell Tate, Tyson, and Lemon, probably in that order. I would have a round one/two grade on Denzel Boston, on Omar Cooper, on Concepcion. Probably that's about it for the first round grades on second round grades anyway. The reason I bumped him down is on that situation was because I thought there were other teams in front that needed other stuff, and you know I didn't make trades in that one, so I just thought, this is possible that these guys slide a little bit. If you really start nitpicking, Carnell Tate is a really good player. I like him a lot. I think he's got wide receiver one potential, but it's not a no doubt. We just talked about Tyson's injury concerns. So, you know, there's obviously availability issues there. But Kyle Lemon is a really quarterback-friendly target who does a lot of really good things, but he's small and kind of slow and not really strong, right? He's like a smaller, not as strong version of Amon-Ra St. Brown, which you kind of need more of that stuff to get by. So I have some concerns on him. And then, you know, Cooper is smaller. Boston doesn't have terrific long speed. So all of them have a hiccup, I suppose. So to me, this receiver class is solid. It's not elite. I don't think this is an elite group. Or anyone like the year that they got Garrett Wilson, that was a terrific receiver class. This isn't that. It's still good, but it's not quite that.
So if the Jets don't, for some reason, take a pass catcher with that second pick, or even if they do, I think they could double dip potentially. I'm curious if there are any like day 2/early day 3 guys that are some prospects that you like at receiver.
Receiver? Yeah. We mentioned one earlier, somebody, Jeremy Bernard, Jets favorite there. Jeremy had one of the best 3-cones. I think he had the best 3-cone at the combine. He had one of the best 3-cones in the draft. Did really well in the short shuttle too. And that shows up on tape. Like, he is really crafty. He's got some of that quarterback friendly stuff too, where he'll come back to the ball, was really reliable, helped out Ty Simpson a ton, and was very good after the catch. I just like a safe player who I think is really going to help out a lot. I would also throw in a guy like Antonio Williams into that conversation from Clemson. Another guy who's really quick, who you can just put in the slot, play at Z, and he can just be kind of like a comfortable, almost like an extra tight end, you know, like a safety blanket. Surratt from Indiana would be another one. I don't know where he's going to go. Athletically, he's not great. I think some teams are going to be way higher on him than others. So I just don't know where he's going to wind up. And then the other one I would throw out there too, in the similar vein, is Zach Branch from Georgia. He's a little bit smaller, but like so dependable. And I really thought he brought something to Georgia's offense that they haven't had other than Brock Bowers in maybe like a decade. I mean, he was really good after the catch and just so dependable. So that's the strength of this class receiver-wise, I think, is when you get down, when you get into, you know, the second and third round, maybe even the early fourth, you're going to be able to find some guys that aren't maybe going to be superstars, but are going to be really good players who help you out.
Not to put you on the spot, but I'm a UConn alum and I have an agenda.
Oh boy.
What do you think of Skylar Bell?
I love Skylar Bell. When I got a question the other day on like, who's one of your guys? And that was the first one that popped into my head. Like when he ran a 4.41 or something like that at the combine. And that's when I was like, okay, this guy, he's a top 100 guy for me. I've seen enough. I was at the Shrine Bowl this year. He was down there and he was cooking people there too. Was the most productive receiver in college football last year. Had some drop problems, but like the guy's always open. I really think he's going to be a good player too. I think that he could be a steal for somebody. People get worried about the size, right? And the level of competition sometimes, but I wouldn't overthink it with him. He's a good player.
You kind of like touch on this, but I just think if you're an NFL team, there's no reason not to draft a wide receiver every year in like day two, day three. Because
absolutely,
you stumble into stars in that stretch. Like it's almost like I understand if you don't take a receiver in the first round because there's just so many of these guys. The Jets just need pass catchers so severely. Like I would double dip personally, but we talked a little about
too. You don't have to pay these guys like overpaying somebody $20 million that you're like, oh, he's probably like a $14 million player, but we got to do this. These guys in the second or third round, they are ready to go. That's been the receiver market has been impacted by this for the last several years. So, yeah, that would be a great strategy going forward.
And I think that's Muji's thought process. I mean, they haven't signed a single receiver this offseason.
Right.
They wanted to get A.D. Mitchell because he was on a rookie contract. They wanted to get Mechie. That didn't work out as well. But, I just think that's good roster building so you don't overpay receivers in free agency. But want to hit QBs real quick again. Like you mentioned Simpson and the idea of taking him day two. Assuming the Jets don't take Simpson, or let's say they don't, there is a lot of conversation about whether they should draft a developmental guy, whether that's third round, fourth round. Drew Aller's very mixed reviews among Jets fans, I would say. I mean, you don't hear Nussmeier as much attached to the Jets. He did have a private workout with them. I've seen Cole Payton. What do you think of these guys as like developmental guys? If you're using like a fourth round pick, is pretty valuable selection for a Jets team that probably needs contributors this year. But
it's really interesting because like the best one of that group is probably Nussmeier, but the guy that interests me the most is probably Aller because he has all the physical tools and Nussmeier does. I don't know if Garrett Nussmeier will ever be more than just a really good backup quarterback for a long time. Like Chad Henne, we were talking about before the show, like a guy like that, which is fine, which is, that guy has a role in the league. And that's important. And you can, the Jets are going to need a guy like that somewhere along the way eventually. So that's one thing. But Aller, I think, is a guy with his physical ability, with his arm talent, his size and his movement and everything else. You know, if you could get him to settle down and learn how to play quarterback, like he could be a starter in the NFL. He's got all the traits to do it. It's just it never really went together for him consistently in the NFL. I thought he should have left last year, honestly.
Yeah.
He came back. It never worked out. He got hurt. The whole thing was a mess and a wash. It's almost like we haven't seen him in a year kind of thing. So he's a little bit of a mystery for some people, but that's a guy that's had interest for me for a while. I wouldn't mind. Yeah. He would be a nice one to say, let's just see what he is. You know, if you get him in the fourth round and you're going to go at it again next year anyway, if you can get like an Arch Manning or something, obviously you do that too, but like, let's just see what he is. I think more teams should do that. Yeah. Honestly, when the opportunity presents itself, because you never know what if he turns into a stud and you can get rid of him or trade him or whatever else. So, that's one guy.
So you're saying we just need to get Drew Aller into the vaunted Jets quarterback development factory.
Yes.
And then we'll be okay. All right.
Jets quarterback system. Right. And then, he won't be like Christian Hackenberg or anything at all. It won't be the exact same situation.
This time it'll be different. So that's a good transition to talking about the quarterbacks next year. The Jets, at least the fan base, has run the whole gamut in the last 12 months from, hey, we're going to get Mendoza possibly to we'll take Dante Moore number two to okay we can get Ty Simpson at 33 to you know what we just shouldn't take a quarterback this year we should wait till next year. And there's this whole conversation around the next quarterback class is loaded, but we heard that last year about this year's quarterback class. So the way I have it right now, I have like it's Arch, it's Dante, it's Julian Sain, it's Jordan Maiava. And then you have like Mestemaker and Carr, which is like Carr's probably in that top five, but he might not come out next year.
Right.
He might want to spend an extra year. Yep. So
I put him in pencil. Yep.
What do you make of kind of the whole like, A, the next class is going to be great. And what do you think of these six guys specifically and the balance of, take somebody developmental this year, wait till next year. Like, what do you make of all that?
So I think that the Jets are actually in a unique situation to do that if they want to be one of the teams that could wait and just say, hey, next year should be better than this. Even if it's not loaded, it's probably going to be better than this. There's going to be more than one guy at the top of the draft, most likely. You're going to have Arch, Dante Moore probably as well. I think Lenora Sellers is another one, too, that can probably be, you know, in the conversation. We'll see about the Chambliss, you know, what he does at Ole Miss. So there'll be some guys that are older that won't really have a choice, and they'll kind of have to go. But by and large, the strategy of let's just wait, next year's class will be better, that cannot happen anymore for people. I think that we have now seen a few years of evidence where NIL has changed everything. You know, if Arch Manning declared for the draft this year, he would have been a first-round pick. He absolutely would have been. Dante Moore, too. Lenora Sellers, too, right? Whether they were ready or not, they would have been a first-round pick. But, like, the ability to stay there and make that money has changed everything, and you just can't predict who's going to do what anymore. Like, we don't know if Arch Manning says, I'm going back to Texas and I'm going to come out in 2028 or whatever. Like, he could do that. Like, that's he has no financial – I think, actually, I saw the other day, Sark said that they're not paying him. He's there for free. So, like, he's a free roster player. And
yeah, need the money.
So he just wants to be in college. So, like, it's a unique situation. And guys are now more comfortable with, hey, I don't have to be 20 years old. I can be a little bit older. It'll be fine. I can wait a little bit, take my time. Like, Dante Moore, I think, is a great example. A lot of people got on that whole, well, he doesn't want to be a Jet. That's why he ran away. And I'm like, yeah, I think Dante Moore is a smart kid who said, look, I'm not ready. I'm getting paid like $8 million or whatever here at Oregon. I'll just do it again and run it back. And it's really not going to change. You know, in a year, I'll still be able to hit at this again. So I think that's all that was. And I do think we'll see more of that going forward. So you just can't project it. So like we were just saying, Zach, like if a guy is there that you think is developmental in the draft, just take him and just don't wait. You know what I mean? I think that almost like we say, take a receiver every year. I wouldn't take a quarterback maybe every year, but like I would think about it because you just can't predict the future like that anymore. You can't plan 2 years out like they used to be able to do.
Well, and right now the Jets backup quarterbacks are also Bailey Zappe and Brady Cook, so they could use some blood in there.
Juice in there, yeah, for sure.
Somebody I didn't realize
maybe right.
I didn't realize we had reached the point where college players were taking less to help build up the roster around them. That's NIL's next level with Arch Manning.
Unreal.
I'm going to throw this poll back up here because I have a feeling it only works while it's up. So I don't know. People type some ones, twos, threes, and fours in.
We're testing this out. Yeah.
Otherwise, this is a complete flop. But who will the Jets be taking? Arvil Reese, David Bailey, Jeremiah Love, or other? I'll leave it up there for a minute and see if anything works. Otherwise, we'll go back to the drawing board as far as that goes. Back to the interview. And Nick, I'd love to hear like the overrated, underrated discussion as far as the prospects in this draft. Who are people too high on first, and then who are people too low on?
Ooh, yeah, that's a really good one. I have a really hard time with Caden Proctor, the Alabama tackle. I know a lot of people love him, and I understand why. It's an obvious he's a giant, right, who just 6'8", he can catch, and he can run and do all this stuff. I mean, my God. But, like, hey, last time I checked, offensive tackles don't have to break tackles or run or catch the ball or do any of that. They have to play with consistent hands, consistent bend, consistent technique. And when I watch Caden Proctor, he got better last year, but when I watch him over 3 years, you don't see anything remotely consistent. It's all over the place for me. So I'm lower on him, I feel like, than most people are. And then some of those guys, we did mention, even though I did have him lower, Omar Cooper, the two Indiana kids, Omar Cooper, actually I'll give you three Indiana kids, Omar Cooper, D'Angelo Pons, and Riley Nowakowski, the tight end, H-back, fullback, slot, whatever the heck, he's everything for them. Those three dudes are the real deal. Like, I think Cooper is one that I think more people have caught on to, could absolutely be a first round pick. He was Mendoza's best friend, you know, at Target, whatever, all year. Last year was so smooth. Pons, as we just talked about, is like an Aaron Glenn clone. And then the Nowakowski kid, I thought was like the X factor to Indiana's entire offense. He was really savvy. I think Dane Brugler has him somewhere in the fourth round. And I agreed with that. I thought that was good because that was the highest I think I've seen him. Yeah. Really good player. He's like 6'2", 245, and he's oddly shaped, but a guy who's going to be somebody who gets it done next year.
I mocked Nowakowski to the Jets in my last PFF I keep picking in like the sixth and seventh round, and he's there, and I'm like, why is this kid still here every single time?
See, now you do know football. See, don't sell yourself short, because that is a heck of a pick.
The tight end evaluation process in the NFL is strange. Yeah. It seems like people can't get it right.
100%. And I do think it's changing, because the talent that we see every year is getting so, like, this tight end class is awesome. You're going to get UDFAs who make something in the NFL this year. But there's so many of them coming out that teams have been forced to be like, look, we don't have to just look at them as a guy who just blocks or runs routes and that's it, and we can't pay him. It's like, no, he could be a focal point of your offense if it's the right player and the right talent, like Colston Loveland last year and Tyler Warren too also. So I think the narrative is changing around that position too, which is good.
I will say one of my favorite things about draft season is just thinking about how my wife would react to descriptions, and you describing another man as oddly shaped was funny. It just made me laugh. We talk about this stuff like that. It just, like, if you just, like, take a step back, it's kind of funny. But
it is.
I'll try and explain some, like, draft stuff to my wife sometimes, and she'll be like, I have no idea what you're saying. But, like, the way we talk about, like, bodies, he has a great lower half. I love his lower half. You know,
he's high cut. Anyway. Yeah, all those things.
Arms are too short.
Long arms. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. It always cracks me up. But anyway, so we got a couple AG questions for you.
Yeah.
I feel like this time last year, we were asking your perspective on him as someone who covered him in Detroit. Now I'm curious, as we reflect back on, like, how his first season went, like, unmitigated disaster, obviously. But I'm curious, like, from your perspective, like, what it was like seeing it go the way he did, the way he handled himself. Like, I do think he's taken some of the right lessons. We'll find out. But I'm curious, like, what your perspective was on him from afar.
Yeah, I had concern. That was a concern of mine, that if it got bad, that he would just go off the rails because he's so intense. And, like, and he wouldn't be able to calibrate himself, because he did have some times, a few times in Detroit, where he'd get something, in the early days when they just didn't have any talent. And he's just killing himself out there, and they're making little progress here and there, and it wouldn't work, and he just was losing. But Dan Campbell does have the ability to sort of calibrate. And I'm hopeful that, like you said, Zach, like, maybe he's learned from some of those lessons, because I think that if he looks back on the year, it's just like he just needs to be the same all year long, the same guy, the himself all year long, I feel like. And I think that last year we saw him going through what a lot of first-year coaches go through, who have waited a long time to do that job. They just go into it 1,000 miles an hour, guns blazing. They don't stop. They don't take a breath. And then by the time you look up, you haven't won a game and you're getting into fights with reporters. And, like, it's like, what is happening? And so to me, he runs hot anyway. And that was why I kind of was like, man, okay, New York, it's going to be intense there. You know, they're not going to give you a break, but that's also kind of like I think he likes that too. So he's a hard one for me to figure out sometimes, because he does go all over the place. But, like, if he could just, like, take a breath, I feel like, and calm down, you know, maybe things could be okay. Because I do like what Mogi has done. I like what the front office has done. I thought that roster, it wasn't just one thing. They needed to rebuild the roster, whether it's Aaron Glenn as the coach or not, like, long term. So I still like him, Aaron Glenn. I think that he's a guy that players, when they get to know him and, you know, they can have success, will follow. I've seen it happen. A lot of guys love him, will swear by him, and will forever. So I know that that's in there. It's just a matter of, will he have enough time and give himself enough time to get it out? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it was a fascinating offseason, because he put the target on himself even more when he fired half his staff and took over play calling and all that stuff. But on that note, you already mentioned the obvious one, who I would have mentioned in this question anyway, but who are some guys in this draft that, like, as someone who knows what Aaron Glenn looks for, you look at as, like, okay, I could see that being an Aaron Glenn guy, the guy he's going to pound the table for. D'Angelo Pons is the obvious one.
Pons is the obvious one. You know, there's a couple linebackers that I think he will really like. Jacob Rodriguez from Texas Tech. I think he's going to love him. You know, there's a bunch of them, actually. Like CJ Allen, the kid from Georgia, also I think he'll like. Those guys are really just solid guys who get the job done, who do what they're told, who don't mess around, and who lead by example and don't worry about anybody else. Another defensive back would be Keontae Scott from Miami. He's another guy who's a little bit smaller, but just an absolute – he plays like a linebacker. I mean, he's just all downhill all the time. You know, probably too aggressive at times, if we're honest. I think he'll also love Caleb Downs. I flirted with the idea of giving them Downs at two back a while back. I couldn't do
he
it.
He does feel like a Glenn guy, yeah.
Yeah, athletically, I'm not sure that he's worth it at two, but if they trade it out, I don't know. But that to me, he really does feel like a Glenn guy. Offensively, it's usually harder, but I think like guys like Omar Cooper stand out for me, or Jeremy Bernard, those receivers that are just very reliable. You don't ever have to worry about them. They just show up, do their job, keep it moving. Some of these tight ends too, like Roush from Stanford. I love, he'll love Sadiq too, but like some of the tight ends, Josh Cuevas from Alabama, maybe in the later rounds, are really solid guys who just show up, get the job done, and keep it moving. But defensively, there's going to be a bunch of them. There's going to be a ton of guys, I think, that would fit what he wants. So this is a big opportunity, and they're going to have to hit it and show some growth, and that is actually happening for him to be able to have some momentum, I feel like, going forward. But yeah, we'll see.
I know the math might not make sense at two, but maybe in a trade down scenario, would you say that Reuben Bain would fit that personality profile?
Oh yeah. Yes, absolutely. I think that they wouldn't, I don't think he'd care at all about the arm. I remember actually when the Lions drafted Aiden Hutchinson, it was a big mystery there at what they were going to do at two. Everybody overcomplicated it, thought they were going to take Kayvon Thibodeau, thought they were going to do something else. Aiden Hutchinson had shorter arms, and I remember they drafted him, and Aaron Glenn was one of the first people to talk about him to the media, and he was like, somebody asked him about his arms. He's like, I don't care about any of that. Like, just watch the tape. This guy is amazing. Like, we don't care. He's going to be great. I think that's how he would see a guy like Reuben Bain, who's just like, he comes off the ball so fast and gets through a tackle's chest that the length doesn't – it's usually rendered useless anyway, so – I think they would like him for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's a bunch of clips, if you go back to Muji's time as a scout in Denver, of him talking about measurables and how important it is to him. And then you have Aaron Glenn, who's kind of on the other end of it. And it's just like, I just want football players. So I think Jets fans are twisted up about who's right and who are we going to go with here. So do you have any like guys in this draft that either you're rooting for, you think they're too low, like you just really, really like what you've seen, you really like what you've heard, anything like that? And As an add-on to this question, I'll give you an opportunity to talk about a Michigan State alum that I've looked at, Matt Golden, the center, because I think the Jets could use an interior offensive lineman at a value spot late in the draft. So any guys that you just really love that you're trying to drive their agenda forward?
Yeah, I like – I'll give you one on offense, one on defense. Offense, Eli Heidenreich, the receiver slash running back, slot back, whatever he was, the Navy's all-time leading receiver. He ran the fastest three cone of anybody that Dane had in the Beast, which is like 2,800 guys. He had the fastest three cone time of anyone. Wow. So he's probably the most agile guy in the draft. And he's just like, he is going to be something somewhere. I don't know what, but like, he'll have to have a role. He'll have to figure it out. It'll have to be on a team that they can fit him. But like, he's in a terrific route runner who's just impossible to deal with in those tight spaces, especially out of the backfield. So I like him a lot. And then defense, Charles Demings from Stephen F. Austin is a corner there that, he's this year's guy that turned down all the money to stay at the FCS school that he thought built him and made him who he was. He's this year's, like, Quinyon Mitchell did that a few years ago. There's always – I love these guys. There's always one or two of these guys every year that, you know what, that Stephen F. Austin was the only place that ever wanted me or gave me a shot that, you know, blah, blah, blah. They were my coaches here. I'm sticking with them the whole way through. I want to be in the Stephen F. Austin Hall of Fame. I did a story on him, and he was, like, you know, tearing up when he went to the combine and saw his name on the TV with Stephen F. Austin next to it. And then it said the only FCS player there. So he's a really cool dude. I like him a lot. He's a lot of fun. And then the Michigan State center, he's the only hope this year, I feel like. That and the punter for Michigan State to have a guy to go off. So hopefully he goes off the board there. I think he might go like fifth or sixth, though. He's a nice player. So I think that's actually indicative of the center class in general. I think there'll probably be more. There won't be any guys on day one. There might not be any on day two, but I think there'll be a bunch on day three that are quality players that either are depth or might even surprise you a little bit.
Our team's going to get spooked about Connor Liu's leg.
Probably so. And I think that's what's going to drive him down. But like, he's a really good athlete and like upside there, depending on your offense too, because Connor Liu, Logan Jones, Hecht and Slaughter, they're all smaller. So like if you're a team that wants to hammer the ball a little bit, I don't know if you can do that. If you're a zone team, those guys are great, but if you're not, it might be limiting it a little bit.
You mentioned Charles Deming in the story you did. Everybody that hasn't should definitely check out that story on The Athletic. Really good stuff about him. And it reminded, you did a Quantes Stiggers story a couple years ago.
Yes.
Still on the Jets.
Still there. These guys exist. They're all over the place. Yeah.
He's one of those guys I think that like the coaching staffs love because of what he is in the background.
Oh, yeah. That's what I told them back then. I was like, you'll be in the NFL for a long time. because there's going to be coaches that are like, this guy's amazing. Even if for nothing else, we'll just.
He's a great personality too. Yeah,
exactly.
He's like a go-to locker room guy. Or great last year he was a pretty rough locker room last year, other than him. But and he's,
right. Talk about perspective though. He's been through it. You know, it's like, hey, it could be worse.
Yeah. That's right. He's carved out a nice little special teams thing too. Like he's pretty dynamic as like a gunner. So I think that they've added a bunch of defensive backs, and he's still on the roster as of now. So they clearly like him. I would think
that's great. Awesome.
Nick, what's the next six days like for you? Is that, like, the work done at this point? You get to kind of and just do a bunch of podcasts, or are you still?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. Doing podcasts and then like whatever the last little. It's not quite done. Like you guys know, it's never. They always have stuff for us until like the last. I feel like Wednesday is when they're like, okay, you guys could just like chill for a minute, and then Thursday
you guys chill for the 10 minutes that you have
six until
the
hours starts, or whatever. Yeah, and then here we go. So. It'll be hectic, but then it'll be over soon too, so that's fine.
You know, so that's why that first day of the draft, it starts so late that whole day is brutal, because it's just like,
yes.
I know I'm going to be up all night
until 5 in the morning or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it's I love the draft is like one of my favorite things. But the cover as a fan, I always loved it. But those are my two latest nights of the year too, just as a writer, especially.
It's like the election of the NFL. That's what I always call it, election night.
You know
NFL.
What, Zach? Yeah. Someday you'll cover a Super Bowl and you'll get to stay up later. And
that's true.
Even later.
That would be lovely.
Draft. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say that like the Jets usually on like day one only have one pick in the top 10. This year they have two. So it's
going to be
a little more, which it is exciting. Mm-hmm. And then day two moves a little faster and is honestly, in some ways, more fun, just because like it's way more wild card. You have no idea.
Yeah, they have a big opportunity here. This is a big.
I know. That's why I think fans are excited and nervous, as to use Paul's golf analogy earlier.
When the Lions had that, what was it, the year after they traded Stafford, they had a similar situation. They had a ton of picks, including two.
That was the Gibbs Campbell year, right?
No, it was. They had two of those years. Oh, okay. That was the Sewell and somebody else. Right. I don't know what it was. But like people were like freaking. They were like, if we get this wrong. It's all over, you know, and it's like, well,
that's what it sounds like here right now. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it's tough, but I get it.
And with 33, you can't even go off the clock Friday during the day. Cause there's going to be like, are they trading the pick all day?
Right.
Yeah.
All day long. Yeah.
All right, Nick, thanks so much, man, for joining us. We appreciate it. We know you're very busy this time of year more than any other. So thanks for the insight.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
See you, Nick.
All right, great stuff from Nick. Any thoughts from the interview? Anything stand out to you guys, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, I think Nick gives great perspective, and he obviously knows Aaron Glenn pretty well. I think he told me at one point, I think he like watched film with Aaron Glenn when he was with the Lions or something like that. So like he knows like how Aaron Glenn thinks to a degree. But as Paul was saying, like it's gonna be fascinating because Muji thinks differently. Like Aaron Glenn just has guys who I think he likes because of their like competitive streak or like whatever, like doesn't care about the measurables, where I do think Muji is way more analytical and thinks about things in a different way. So it's a good balance to have for sure. And I'm curious to see like who wins out. Like, I think we'll know from these draft picks, like who, like if D'Angelo Pons is the pick, like that's an Aaron Glenn pick. Clearly if Ruben Bain is the pick, that's an Aaron Glenn pick. But if it's more traditional size, speed parameters, like then I think it's safe to say Muji had some influence on it. Like not to say like, you know, that was Muji picked that one and he was going against Aaron Glenn or whatever it was. But I don't know. It's just fascinating because they have so many picks, like how they choose to go about it. And I was telling you guys before, I've been working on my mock draft, my final one for like since yesterday afternoon, pretty much nonstop shuffling who I wanted at different spots. I think the second round is where I have the hardest time because like you don't know exactly who's going to be there and it becomes about value and need. And I'm like really struggling with 33 and 44. I'll eventually settle on something. This has stressed me out way more than it usually does. I think they just have so many picks and the fans are like so much more passionate about this draft class than even the past ones I can remember. So I'm like really stressed about getting it right. And I hope I do. And I hope I make everyone happy and I'm 100% accurate. Like I want to find that balance, you know?
Well, you should do a really predictive one where you try really hard to get it right. And then you should also do a rage bait one where you just see how mad you can make people.
Oh man, that would be a mock draft of all the picks that would make fans the most mad. I think I could do that actually.
Yeah, no, I thought, you know, Nick was great. It always impresses me, the encyclopedic knowledge that the deep draft guys have of just like, hey, I'm going to throw a random UConn wide receiver at you. I'm going to throw a random Michigan State center at you. And he's just got it cold. So this really is like the election night Super Bowl for them. And I love tapping into those draft guys' brains.
So the poll did work. Although very disappointed in the participation. We'll have to keep working on this because there's five votes and one of them was you, Ball, and one of them was me. And I went with four just to make sure that it really worked because everything was just coming up Arvel Reese. But it does work and we'll do more of these as we go forward. Everybody confident despite the smokescreen that it'll be Reese and not Bailey, or maybe people are just wishful that it'll be Reese.
It does seem like the majority wants Reese. I think there's a small segment of the fan base that wants David Bailey. As we've talked about, I don't think there's a wrong answer. I just think Arvel Reese is way more like, you got to aim for stars when you're picking number two overall. And I just feel like he's more likely to be a star. I will say, just to shout this out, I am going to be in New York today. I know Tim is probably going to tease this too, but I'm going to be there for the Beast. I say that now because I was thinking about like what it's got to be like for someone like Dane, who spends the literally entire year building that thing. It's out in the world. Everybody's obsessed with it. And then the draft comes. Like I just can't even imagine what that's like mentally as you go into the draft, seeing where all these guys fall, how your board looks. And I'm sure it's a lot of fun for Dane to look at, you know, how things played out. And because he has his own rank, he does his own work. It's not a consensus thing. Like there's a lot of guys he has higher and lower than the rest of the public. And there's just no better draft guide than Dane's. So I'm a fan, even if he wasn't my coworker. So.
He's probably so weird because people about summer scouting.
Oh yeah, he definitely is. He's also a psycho. Yeah.
People can go to that event, right? Or is that invitational?
Yeah, it's a public event. I believe it's going from like 3 to 5, or maybe it's longer than that. That's when I'm going to be there. At least it's by across the street from Chelsea Market. This afternoon in New York, they're going to have like a bunch of copies of The Beast, I think, for the first 100 people that show up. Justin Tuck is going to be there. Dan Duggan and Charlotte from The Athletic. I went to the event last year. It was at Scar's Pizza. I got some free pizza, which I thanked Dane for when we had him on the pod during the season. But it's a fun thing, and it's crazy how big that thing has gotten. Like they have a whole ad like on the side of a building to like advertise The Beast.
In three different cities, I think. And Dallas, New York.
Dallas, Chicago, and Pittsburgh. Yeah. You're not at Dallas, I'm sorry. New York, Chicago, and Pittsburgh. Yeah. So it's a cool event. And then I don't know if you want to lay out what we're going to be doing next week for the pod. Yep. We're going to have a bunch.
Yeah, so we'll be back on, we said Tuesday. We'll be back on Tuesday with our final draft preview, which I think will be like rumors, gut feelings, that sort of stuff. And then we'll be coming to you Thursday night at the end of the draft with one reaction, another reaction on Friday night to day two. And then we'll be back early the next week for the full recap of the draft. So plenty to get to. Paul, you can hit all those times, right?
I'll be fine. I'll figure it out.
You're not sleeping on draft night.
You'll be up. You'll be up. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be like, even if I wasn't podcasting, I'll be so wound up from everything. Anyway, so.
It's a good way to get it out.
I will say, like the Bailey smoke from the last week, it felt like maybe there's a shred of truth to this until they canceled the top 30 visit thing. I was like, all right, like we need to lay off with this PR stuff. Like this is obviously they're pumping information out in order to confuse people. So to me, it felt like they did like one chess move too many. And I was like, all right, this is all nonsense.
Well, and then you had the Connor report of the canceled visit, and then you had all nine national people being like, but this doesn't mean anything also. Right. Like, let's make sure we tell you guys that too. That's why I'm saying, and I don't doubt it, either side of that reporting. I'm just ready to get to the draft. Mm-hmm. It's all nonsense. Like I've never heard of like it. Maybe this has happened previously and it just never got out. I've never heard of like a top prospect having a top 30 visit canceled right before the draft like this. Like I thought that was weird. But like they could still wind up drafting Bailey for all I know. So like I'm not going to put a lot of stock into it either way.
It's also possible they haven't decided yet.
Yeah,
very possible. You know,
like everyone's like they're
trying to trade.
Which, by the way, they may not know who they're taking yet.
Which, by the way, is not like an indictment on the Jets.
No,
like,
that's, no, no. That,
it's yeah, it's yeah, not yeah. abnormal
working to the end.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to be back. We're finally there. One more preview, and then we get to actually react. And those are the more fun episodes. So thanks to everybody. Thanks for the baggage handlers joining us live here. We'll work on the polls. We'll get better. Thanks to everybody for listening. Give us those 5-star reviews, thumbs up, all that stuff. And we'll talk to everybody next week.